Good evening and welcome to Town Square. I'm Beth Ann Koslovich. As always, our conversations include you. And if you'd like to join us anytime during the program, the phone lines are open. Here's the number, 941-3689, 941-3689. If you're on Oahu, that's the number to use. From the Neighbor Islands, toll free at 877-941-3689. Well, the holiday season is underway. As songs and Hallmark specials like to remind us, it's especially a time to focus on those closest to us, family and friends. But for Neil Milner, a story about the generations of his family is never far from his mind, regardless of the season. Many of his stories have been recently collected in a book he's published called The Gift of Underpants. And so tonight, we're going to take a break from what usually happens when Neil joins us. That would be analysis of Hawaii and U.S. politics and policy, and look at some of the greatest politicians of all times, our families, and the policies that, for good or not so good, help shape who we are and how we look at life. And we just bet you have a few good stories about your own families. Just keep them clean and call us, 941-3689 or 877-941-3689. As tonight, we step back a little bit and do some of the things we're supposed to do this season and take a good look at our families. Good afternoon.
Good afternoon.
I saw you wince at all of that.
Well, when you said Hallmark moment, that doesn't quite get at my family, although it's not exactly, well, you'll see.
I don't think it gets at a lot of people's
lot of families.
Family.
No.
It's sort of
that's
more
right.
In the realm of maybe wishful thinking or just a nice little fantasy now and again,
yes.
Stories that wrap up in 2.5
Fair
hours.
Enough. Fair enough. Right.
But the thing with The Gift of Underpants is that, first of all, aside from having a very arresting title, and you might get arrested if you wore those things out in public somewhere, but The Gift of Underpants starts with you and what was done for you when you were a kid. You want to read that a little bit and sort of put everybody else
sure.
into the picture?
This is from the title story called The Gift of Underpants, and it sort of sets a lot of the theme for the book, which is how generations deal with one another in real ways when they live far away from each other. But this has to, and how underpants becomes a currency. But this is from that early story, and it talks about how that all began in my family. Starting with their early visits to Honolulu, my family also brought me underpants. My mother had begun to gift me with underpants when I first moved away from home after college. At the time, she worked at Gimbel's in Milwaukee, so she could use her employee's discount, 15% off. Buying me underpants was nothing new to her. No matter how rebellious an adolescent male is, his mother still buys him his underwear. Breaking away from your parents stops at buying your own underpants. When your mind is only on sex, drugs, and rock and roll, you're not going to be checking your dresser drawer to see how many decent pairs you still have. James Dean in Rebel Without a Cause let his mother buy him his briefs. Natalie Wood loved him even more for this.
Well, speaking as a mother who for all these years always includes in a stocking or in a gift a really great pair of boxers, because I've got three guys, they all like boxers, and they better be really cool boxers. So I've been doing The Gift of Underpants for quite a while, and no one seems to mind, and I've never had a word of, okay, Mom, maybe it's time to knock that off. Is that sort of a perpetual thing in families that we don't really talk about silly things like this?
Well, but it's not – I mean, first of all, this makes a great stocking stuffer. How can you go wrong? You can wrinkle it up any way you want and stick it down there. You can't do that, say, with, you know, with a Lexus. But try. Okay, that's right. But the story really is about why underpants becomes a kind of comfort food for generations that – even if there's tension in the families, even if you don't know what your children are doing, and even if your children are doing things that they're afraid to ask you to help them with, underpants is always a safe gift. It's the comfort food of giving. And so it becomes a kind of currency that you can take with you or get delivered to you as a way of maintaining connections. It's part of the maintaining connection. Now, I should say it never works the other way. Kids never buy underpants for their parents. Well, it'd be interesting to see what they would
maybe
buy.
Maybe depends at some point in time.
Yeah, well, that's – yes. We don't even want to go there. That's
no,
right.
Don't.
No. But in our family, it was kind of unselfconscious. but it was clearly a powerful thing. They need them. They want them. They're convenient. And they became a kind of way of connecting the generations. And I've discovered that lots of people do that, and they never really thought about the significance. It's just something that they did for their kids.
But it's a pretty intimate gift. I mean, any way you want to look at it, something that's going to go, it's next to the kid's body.
Yeah.
And it's and when you say it's almost like a comfort food, in that way, perhaps it is. It's almost like wrapping, you know, your heart around them, not in a way that would be inappropriate, but just to be able to give them something that they need and that also expresses the fact that you're still my child and I can still do this.
That's true. But let's face it, it may be a kind of close to your body, but nobody is buying their kids edible underpants, right? And when my
I wasn't going to say
no,
anything.
But I think that the point is that it's more functional and intimate. It's safe. I mean, look at the ones that my mother-in-law used to give
me. Well, yours really were functional. Yeah. I mean, I got to tell you, Neil, I mean, those white things are gracing the cover of your book. They're kind of ugly.
Oh, yeah. The cover artist got it just right when he designed it. He said, I read the story and got it just right. But that's the point. It was, they were ugly, but they were neutral. And they became accepted as far as I was concerned because I wasn't going to tell my in-laws, buy me another kind. And by the same token, they never thought about it as being an intimate garment.
It was just something they could bring you.
Yeah, that's right. To them, I don't know, a yarmulke would be an intimate garment maybe, but this was something that was functional. I don't think they ever thought of the fact that it covered my private areas.
Well, I mean, now you can turn on the TV and see a commercial for Joe Boxer with all these cute guys wearing really cute boxers and they're playing jingle balls, you know, basically what they're trying to tell you with playing jingle bells behind it, and it's a completely different ball game.
So to speak.
Yeah. The point being, I know you're trying to recover from that one. The thing about the underwear, though, is that this is just a metaphor for what it is that we continue to do for our kids and that our parents continue to do for us in ways that maybe we don't stop to think about it until we stop to think about it.
Well, and I think that's the one of the things I always say, this is a Hawaii book, although a lot of the settings for the stories are not in Hawaii. It's a Hawaii book to me because the issues and the perspective that I got comes from the fact that I live in a place here that I'm so involved with that is so far away from where I grew up and where I still have ties. And a number of the stories have to do with the ways that people in those circumstances, families, try to maintain some kind of connections. And gifting is certainly one of them. And the underpants one, of course, I pick out because it makes a nice story and because it was, in fact, the case. But it's just one of the many examples in these stories about how people reach out to the various generations in very small, non-ideological, not such a big deal sort of way, but really become these little pieces of a mosaic that holds families together. And that's true in lots of places, but there's something particular about Hawaii because it's such an isolated place, for one, and because if you come here from the outside, you find that there are enormous numbers of close extended families that seem very much like the ones that I grew up in. And so, but I find myself, of course, outside of that. And so it's that kind of perspective of knowing what that's like, but being outside of it now, that made me begin to think about these sorts of ways that families, almost without thinking, but still very powerfully, try to hold themselves together.
Tonight we're talking about The Gift of Underpants. It's a collection of short stories that Neil Milner wrote from his own experience about his own family. And we bet you've got some good stories about your families, too, that may come out, especially this time of year. Our number is 941-3689 or 877-941-3689. I'm just wondering, anybody else get or give The Gift of Underpants? My kids aren't listening to this today, but of course there will be those that are shoved down their stocking, and they'll be cool. They'll be from someplace like, I don't know, Banana Republic, or I don't know, something that has really great designs on it, reindeer or something.
Not from the PX where I used
not
to get
from, the PX,
from my in-laws.
And not plain white, not plain blue, or any plain anything. That it'll have some oomph to it. But beyond that, the sense that the continuity of doing that year in, year out, almost the expectation of that, what does that say? What does that mean? Does this happen in your family, too? Please tell us that we're not the only ones. 941-3689 or 877-941-3689.
Let me add one thing. We're going out. We have a granddaughter in New York City, and this is all part of this trying to maintain connections. She's young. My son and his wife live there. He's going to be 44.
And he loves the fact that you just told him.
Well, he's far away. He won't listen to this. Joy told me that she's bringing him underpants when we visit in January.
Yeah, see, it never stops. But what are you going to do for your granddaughter, this little bitty impish person?
Well, try to see her as much as possible. That's the kind of problem.
But is that going to extend to her? Are you going to get her cute little stuff like that and always fill her drawer with something?
Well, I think the real interesting question is whether these kinds of ways that our families and sort of well-meaning, sometimes eloquent, but often half-assed ways try to hold themselves together, whether we'll do the same thing. I mean, you know, the stories that I have about my in-laws especially trying to wrap their heads around the place that has so few Jews and how my kids grew up here, the fact that both sides of my family, both my parents and my in-laws, essentially had to imagine what their grandchildren were like because they didn't see them enough. And whether I'm going to have the same kind of experience and my wife about how do we stay close to a grandchild that we'll not see very often.
Every grandparent's dilemma and
well,
fear
that's right,
when you live very far
that's
away.
That's right, yeah, yeah.
All right, we've got a couple of callers on the line. Hope we've got some good stories coming our way. First going to Sean, calling us from Waikoloa. Aloha, Sean.
Aloha. Yeah, I was listening to your story there, and it reminded me of when I grew up back in Oregon, we had sort of a re-gifting tradition among the men of my family.
Not underpants.
It was one that actually went on for years where someone got somebody else a bottle of Brut cologne, and none of us wore Brut cologne.
Oh, God.
But the funny thing was, it got re-gifted, and I remember it came to me one year, I opened it up, and there it was. And so the next year, of course, gave this to one of my uncles, and it bounced around. But it kind of became like a passage of manhood, because when my younger male cousins got into their teens, then they were included in the joke. And so it became the thing that for, I'd say, at least a good 20 years or more. We don't know when the bottle eventually disappeared.
With the same bottle?
I don't know. Somebody either used it or they threw it away. We don't know what, but we lost track. In fact, what's kind of fun is whenever I get around my uncles and my grandfather, God bless his soul, passed away 12 years ago. And when we all gathered together, my cousins, my uncles, all of us, and we were kind of sharing stories and stuff, the Brut cologne story always comes up. And it's one of the things that we still share to this day. And it's like, it's one of the things you kind of think, well, maybe we should kind of start up again. But nah, you can't, because there's that spontaneity when it first started. But it's one of those things that still, as a family, it still kind of, you know, brings us together, reminds us of those times.
Sean, it's like the passing of the cudgel or the passing of the torch that's very important, or a family Bible moving from generation to generation. And part of what makes it so powerful is that you, as a community, you make fun of this. Delighted that you didn't use it. Brut cologne is in a room with lots of people. You don't want to use.
If you want to get the room cleared really quickly, all you have to do is open it up.
It's the kimchi of colognes. Yeah.
Well, I'm glad you were bonding over Brut, and thank you so much for calling and telling us a great story. Thanks, Sean.
Aloha.
Aloha, and happy holidays. If you have a story for us, the phone lines are open. We're taking a break from all the politics and public policy stuff to look at some of the things that are most important, what we carry with us daily and certainly from year to year during the holidays, family stories, and looking at a lot of the stories that are collected in Neil Milner's book, The Gift of Underpants. 941-3689 or 877-941-3689. Going now to Ken, calling us from Kahalu'u. Hi, Ken.
Hi, how are you?
Pretty well, thanks.
Happy holidays.
And happy holidays to you. What good story happens in your family? They pass underpants, cologne, what?
In our family, it wasn't underpants. It was a different fabric item. It was kitchen dishcloths. And my grandmother would always send gifts to my parents, because we had a fairly far-flung family, and they would wrap the presents in kitchen dishcloths. And so you got two gifts in one, or three gifts in one.
Can I stop you for a second? Can I stop you for a second? I'll actually admit this to you, not to anybody else, but to you. I just did this for my kid for his birthday 2 months ago.
You must have known my mother.
my mother did that until
she died 6 years ago. And I still, every single dishcloth in our house is all something that my mom gave us.
Well, it's perfect because it's much more usable than bubble wrap. I mean, you know, if you got a son away at college and you worry about the son's hygiene habits, you wrap a gift in a towel, right?
Exactly.
And you send it along. So that
yeah, she was very creative at finding cool towels.
Well, like that's good.
We have cats in our house, and so she would have dish towels with kitties all over them and stuff.
You have an Elvis towel?
I'm sorry?
Do you have an Elvis towel?
No, I don't.
Good. Well, Ken, thank you so much for calling and sharing your story. And happy holidays to you. And nice that you can remember all the good things that your mom did over the years with dishcloths.
Thanks. Happy holidays.
Same to you.
You too. Our number is 941-3689, 877-941-3689. Not all the stories are in the book about nutty gifts and fun things, but there are a great deal of them that turn on gifts and things that people need and how they relate to stuff.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Yeah, I mean, it's all about the different ways that, and sometimes it's not even something concrete. Sometimes there's a kind of common language or gesture. I have that story in there about the one about my in-laws trying to understand what it is my kids do for a living, which is, in my son's case, they never could wrap their head around the fact that he wrote for Spin magazine and then wrote a book on Metallica. But there was a kind of language that went between them that my son identifies, and it's in the story, and that is that they would talk about being enthusiastic. And that's almost, in the book I call it, it's a ritual of enthusiasm, but it's really a gift. If you don't understand, if you've spent very little time around your grandchildren and you love them, but you really don't have much of an idea what they're like and you worry about it, And you don't understand what they do, like when my daughter gives up her job to become a temp so she can travel around the world, or my son is writing this music stuff. You express certain things. It's the gift of expression. It's the kind of comfort of the towel or the comfort of the underwear. So there's all these little things that people don't normally think about as being the connectors, but that over the years I just began to hear them in my head. I should say there are a lot of stories in here that don't really have much to do with that sort of thing. They're more interested in how older generations would do things compared how my immigrant family, how my immigrant family in Milwaukee would do certain things compared to now how their hipster grandson living in this, that would be me living in Hawaii, the difference in the way we do things. So there are different things in there, but there is this theme of connection that goes through a lot of them.
Well, and looking at that theme of connection, because we've all been, you know, kids trying to explain something to our grandparents or great grandparents about what we're doing in school, what we're studying, what kind of, you know, job we're after, why we do what we do, and we're all excited about it. And if they can just look and be excited about it too, whether they understand it or not, in some cases, that's enough.
Although it also works best, that one of the stories I mentioned is, that works best if they can't see your face. If you're expressing it, I mean, lots of times you have to deal with members in your family if you live here because you have to deal with them indirectly. Phone, now Skype, but still phone or Facebook.
Yeah, it's FaceTime.
Yeah, or FaceTime, that's right. But a lot of it, especially when these were written, were different. But there still is that sense of attachment that's there.
We want to hear your stories, too. We've heard a couple tonight. But what family stories or what fun things keep happening year after year, or things that are reawakened during the holiday times about family stories that now maybe are becoming a little bit more important than they were last year? 941-3689 is our number, or 877-941-3689. Looking at some of the stories in Neil Milner's book, The Gift of Underpants. I still want to hear from somebody else who's given underpants. I don't want to feel like I'm the only weird mother around. 941-3689 or 877-941-3689. But I won't be, because Joy is going
to
carry underpants. There are two of us.
Yep.
Now I feel better.
And my mother and in-law, may they rest in peace, would, of course, agree that you're doing perfectly the right thing. I think people give them all the time. I think think that's why Costco packs them the way they do, so that you can stick them in your pocket or in a little cylinder.
I thought it was just sort of cost-cutting, and that way is better.
Well, it may be, although that cylinder was – I don't know if they still do that. That cylinder that they used to pack underpants in, the one that's shaped like a
– The one for girls or boys?
I mean, it was for girls.
Yeah, girl panties are in there with all the different colors.
Yeah. Yeah.
But the guy stuff is in there too. Saw those there too.
Yeah,
they're briefs. They're not cute little boxers. Yeah. So for me, I just walked right by.
This may be too much information for a lot of your radio audience. So. We can move away from the undergarment
if you
wish.
I bet not for the moms.
Oh, that's
that
right.
Are out
or
there
we
going.
Can talk about it some more if that's what they. I'll go either way on this.
Well, okay, good. Well, we'll hear what you come up with. Our number is 941-3689. Maybe it wasn't a bottle of Brut. Maybe it wasn't a bunch of dishcloths. Maybe it was, in fact, a bunch of underpants. Something that is a comfort gift that's happening for you, your family, or something that is in your family lore that you can share. As long as it's clean, you're welcome to call 941-3689 or 877-941-3689. A little holiday fun on Town Square tonight. There are some serious stories as you move through the book, too. And serious and funny at the same time. I'm thinking about the fact that so many of the people in your family, because it's a tradition to name people after people, got named the same thing. So trying to talk about which one you're actually meaning at any given time was sometimes exhausting.
Well, that's right. And that's technically they're not getting named directly after people, living people, because that's a violation of
that's
Jewish
right.
tradition.
It's supposed to be somebody
but
who
to me,
gone.
Right, that was one of the first stories I ever wrote. And it had always interested me when I started looking at the names that were in our family and how much the immigrants were, how much they used the same sort of names. But to me, the part of that story that really resonates with other places is name changing. That I had with people in our family would there'd be certain kind of informal name changing names. First names that sounded very Jewish. Jaime, for example, would get called Hi unofficially. But then later on, for economic reasons, they began to take more Anglo-Saxon sounding names because of the broader world where they worried about anti-Semitism. And when I've told that story or talked to people about the story here, they often bring up the fact that they had parents or grandparents Japanese descent who were forced to take on some kind of in schools take on some kind of Americanized first name. So and I think that story illustrates to me a couple of things, one of which is how name changing is very much a part of generations, but how for each of the generations you have to understand the particular culture because the sound means something. If I say here some kind of name that's obviously Jewish to everybody else's ears, and they would understand why you change it, here it's not necessarily the case. But I think that the name changing thing, and I think that it's really interesting how they would make distinctions by using Yiddish between since everybody had the same names, that they would call one little Molly and one big Molly, or in Yiddish grosse Molly and kleine Molly.
All right, well, we're going to pick up about the gift of names in just a minute. We're going to go back to some other fun stories from our listeners, going first now to Larry calling us from Punahou. Aloha, Larry. Hi. Hi there.
I have a story, Christmas story, that relates to another article of clothing.
Okay.
It goes back to when my niece was first given the opportunity to purchase gifts for all of her uncles and her father on her own. And she came home with a really nice dress and a lot of small packages. And no one really quizzed her on it. And Christmas Day, she was wearing a nice dress. And as each one of us opened our Christmas gift, she bought each of us a pair of socks.
Aww.
And with each sock, there came up, I love you. And she's now in her 40s. And I've been living in Chicago. She's in Michigan. I've been living in Chicago and now living here in Hawaii for 14 years. And we have that distance thing. But every year when I get the pair of socks, I know there's enough of you that comes with it.
Oh, I'm getting all mushy over that one, Larry. That's a good story.
And it's a good example of this kind of thing. I mean, socks are very practical and not a very sexy gift, but that's what makes it such good currency.
love socks.
Yeah, exactly.
Sure. Yeah, I mean, it becomes something that at the same time is functional, is safe, but also develops an attachment over time. You know, if somebody stopped giving you socks in your family, you know that there was something drastic that went on, and it probably wasn't in a good way.
There you go. And it gives each one of his brothers a question of, what kind did you get this year? They always get different socks.
Ah.
A gift that functions on two levels. I love it. Larry, thanks so much for calling with the story. It's a good one.
Aloha.
Aloha. But that's sort of what threads through all of the conversations that we've been having in the story that we've heard, the stories we've heard so far tonight. Some way of being able to be close. And fabric, it just seems to be doing that, whether it's a dish towel or whether it's socks or underwear, something that's tangible, that's practical, where you know the person is going to probably put their hands on it, use it, and in some ways almost be an extension of you to be able to touch that person and know that.
Well, it does work like omiyage. I mean, when you bring food, for example, which is a common gift here when you go somewhere else, it's very functional, but it also has a lot of other meaning attached to it. If someone is bringing the kid in Portland from here some kind of, macadamia nuts or kagamochi or whatever, it's not just
bring it
about,
to my house.
But it's also about the fact that there is a sense memory, a place memory there, and not to mention the fact it's easy to pack. That's really a part of it, that you put these kinds of things in as part of something so they become convenient and symbolically important at the same time. We need to get a cut from the dish towel industry for all of the plugs that we're giving here.
Well, that is, and socks and certainly underpants.
Ought to get you
and
people.
How about this? You know, because these are things sort of falling out of fashion, but handkerchiefs. My grandmother used to give me handkerchiefs. And
never mind, nobody uses them anymore.
No, but they were pretty.
And you were never going to tell your grandma not to stand them anymore.
Of course not, because they're gorgeous. They're beautiful.
I'm thinking tomorrow corporate sponsorships that you go calling somebody.
Good, you go call them. I can't do that.
Yeah,
but we are going to go now and talk to Alice calling us from Ainahaina. Aloha, Alice, and thank you for your patience.
No problem. Beth Ann, instead of underpants, I felt that was just too much of an insult for our children, and so we would give them pajamas instead.
Yeah.
That works, too.
Yeah. But the gift that we still give, if we can find it still, are the Lifesaver books.
Oh, the ones that you open up and they have all the different flavors in them?
Yes, yes.
I remember those.
And, I mean, I still send that to our kids, and they're in their 50s. And you know, they say, oh, God, you know, will she ever stop doing this? You know, but it's a joke.
Hey, Alice, you've got kids in Portland, and I've got a kid in Portland. Maybe we can put a joint package together. They don't live that far away from one another, as I remember.
I know, but I got to tell you, I used to, you know, say if somebody's going, oh, you're going to Portland, can I give you some cookies to take to my kids or something, you know? And once our kid in Seattle said, my God, Mom, don't ever do that again. You know, he had to leave it at the hotel, and I didn't have a car then, and I had to get down to that damn hotel and try and get the damn cookies. You know, I'll buy cookies. So that's the last time I did that.
All right, well, we're glad you're still doing the thing with the Lifesavers. God, I still want to know about the wintergreen thing. Remember that when Susan Stamberg went in the closet and tried to see whether they do spark or not? Yeah, I remember that from when I was a kid and I tried it. You know, who didn't?
Can you get Dr. Denton's in sizes for people over 50?
I don't send them that. I just send them the Lifesaver.
Just a suggestion, Alice. Just a suggestion.
Okay,
Alice,
aloha.
Thanks for the call. If you'd like to join us tonight, we're taking a little bit light and whimsical look at the world through gifts and through ways in which we keep close to our families who may be very, very far away. 941-3689 is our number if you've got a good story, or 877-941-3689 if you call us from the neighbor islands, or maybe if you're listening to the live stream far away, we want to hear from you too. How do you stay close at holiday time or other times of the year, but especially now, when we do tend to send gifts? Is there something special that you send or that you do that has become somewhat of a tradition without which it would not be a complete holiday season? You know, I'm a sucker, I'll admit it. You know, my aunt sends me 12 different kinds of cookies that she and my uncle in the Midwest bake over successive weeks. And I, this giant package arrives, and I'm the first one to dive in. And I pick out which ones are going to be mine. I hide those, and everybody else can have the rest. Because my aunt makes them once a year, you know, what can I say?
You're a child.
I am. Aren't we all? Aren't
yes.
we all?
Yes.
941-3689 is our number, or 877-941-3689. Going to Carol, calling us from Kailua. Aloha, Carol.
Hi there.
Hi.
I'd like to share something that my family has been passing down from my grandmother, who was from Scotland, and her name was Bella. And it was a recipe called Bella's Potato Rolls. And I had a chance to be traveling for Thanksgiving, and I found myself traveling with a whole portfolio of handwritten family recipes. And what my grandmother would do is she would make these rolls for Thanksgiving dinner. And she would make them in little knots, and if there was anybody old enough who wanted to help, we helped roll up the dough and make the knot.
I think we've just lost you. It sounds like we're either you hit a dead spot or we did somehow. But Carol, it's a good story, and that's another thing.
I was looking
too.
Forward to the recipe.
Me too. I wanted to hear more about these things because they sounded really good. But how we pass along generational important things that are not just physical stuff, but ways in which you can make it a little bit your own, because it's going to come out a little differently if you do the recipe than if I do the recipe.
Well, recipes in immigrant Jewish families come out a little bit different because the generation, my grandmother was a great cook but couldn't read or write. And so
Carol's back.
Oh, okay. Carol, okay.
Carol, you back? You there?
I'm so sorry. I dropped my phone.
Okay. Then you really did hit a dead zone. Go ahead.
Was it me?
So we would have these rolls for Thanksgiving dinner, and then the rolls would have the leftover. You could make when the turkey was cold, you could put the stuffing and the cranberry sauce on and have the turkey. And then the next morning, this roll dough happened to keep very well in the refrigerator, and it became a whole kid project. And we would make sticky buns. We would get out a muffin pan and roll these little balls of dough and dip them into melted butter and then cinnamon sugar and then chopped pecans, and three of these in each muffin pan, and we would have sticky buns. And it just has become a tradition in my family. Then I married a Jewish man, and I taught myself how to make challah. I raised three Jewish boys, and they all want to know how to make my challah. So this holiday season, I found myself passing on both of these bread traditions. And one of my sons actually made the challah immediately, and he made it in the shape of a turkey. It was hilarious. So, anyway,
you gotta have some humor with all this.
First
Carol.
Of all, I had a challah this year baked by someone, in fact, on your side of the island that was turkey shaped. I'll say that. And let me just tell you that I don't know how long you've lived here, but my challah story. When we first moved here in the early '70s, there was only one place. It was a place in Manoa that made challah, and they would also sell them those challahs at the pillbox. I don't know, the pharmacy in
Kaimuki.
And so we went in there once and asked at the pillbox and asked for a challah, and they brought us a little pink bottle. They thought we said Caladryl, and that's always what we figured. Where else would you have to buy a challah in a pharmacy but in Honolulu?
Well, you know, the idea of passing along bread. I mean,
absolutely.
Everything that bread connotes. And I mean, when somebody moves into a new house, you bring bread and salt. It used to be the old gift that you walk in the house and may this house never know hunger. It doesn't matter what your tradition is, the idea of bread. But also in the case of, you know, some of these things that involve generations, that bring you together something over something other than all this technological stuff.
I mean, look, it's joint work. I mean, challah, you can peep their different state in.
But
bread.
You got to really knead that stuff. And, and then the cinnamon buns, you've got to let it sit there and rise, and you've got to make sure that they're in the right shape. And it, you can't be doing anything else when you're doing that, when you're actually
But you can parcel out the work a little bit.
But the point of that is that if you can pass that tradition on where you bring people together in a way that they might not necessarily do it if they just go out and buy the buns. I mean, heck, it's a lot easier to go out and buy this stuff. But I like these traditions where we actually have to come together and focus on something other than what's on TV, what's on the iPad, what we want to do at the movies, or anything else. Just be there together in a kitchen. We're kind of losing some of that, so I'm glad to hear that some people are not. 941-3689 is our number if you call us from Oahu. That's the number to use, 941-3689 or 877-941-3689. Going to Star calling us from Kailua Kona using that 877 number. Hi.
Hi.
Happy holidays. What's your story?
Oh, happy holidays. My tradition that I've begun with my children and grandchildren is whenever I send a letter, I include the little potpourri that has the little hearts and holidays. I have little heart and holiday-shaped potpourri that I put in. But also, if I send a package, I include the potpourri that's like flower-scented that, you know, we put in vases. And for holidays, it might have a cinnamon smell or something. And one year, this caused an international incident with my daughter. She was in the Peace Corps in Kenya, and I had packaged a great big box that had all the needs that suddenly she had. And the year happened to be 2001, Christmas, right after 9/11, yes. Post-9/11. And I packaged this big box with a solar shower and clothes that she needed and just every odd and end, you know, hot chocolate, whatever I thought would make her feel like she was at home so far away. And she was quite remote out in Kenya. And when I packaged it, I thought, oh, I don't have any potpourri. And my mother said, oh, I've been saving all the potpourri you send in the umbrella stand by the door. So I went, and sure enough, there was some. I pulled it out. It was quite old, but it smelled good still. So I put it in the box and wrapped it up, and $240 later, mailed this box wow. off to Kenya. Well, little did I know, post 9/11, any box that came with any kind of dust or powder in it, and unfortunately, this potpourri was breaking down as it traveled, was immediately gone through sensors and set off alarms. So when it got to Nairobi, they took the box and sent it to the American Embassy, and the American Embassy scanned it and sent it all the way back to Washington, D.C., where it was taken apart, dismembered, every single Christmas present unwrapped, and when it was deemed safe, it made its way all the way back to Nairobi, and in February, my daughter got this Christmas box that she opened, and I had told her it was coming, and she couldn't believe why it was taking so long. And when she finally got it, she said that the Kenyan post office people in Nairobi had tried to put all the wrapping back together and put little pieces of tape. So now my kids always, when they send something back, they send me back my old potpourri and my old little confetti that I send. So I always open packages carefully, as they do also.
That's
but it's my way of saying I love you, and even my grandchildren know if you open something from Tutu, it has to be over the table.
Star, that's a really great story. And boy, bless those people who tried to put all of those bits and pieces back together before your daughter got the gift. But boy, what a story.
Yeah.
Nobody's going to look at potpourri the same way again
in your
family.
The moral is to send underpants, probably. Well, even, they're right, they're so innocuous.
Or dish towels.
Yeah, dish towels, that's
there's
right.
There's not a lot they're going to say with that, easily.
Right, that's right. TSA would have let them through.
I do want to go back to what we started talking about just a little bit before. And if you're listening to this and you have a good story and you want to tell us, the phone lines are open, 941-3689 or 877-941-3689. But the gift of names, all of that, and what that means in a family and how people feel connected to each other, whether it's an Americanized version of a name from a different culture or not, the way they weave together. But really, in your family, how did you keep track of everybody? I mean, everybody had so many repetitive names that...
Well, you did. I mean,
I can't imagine having to, you know, unless you sort of call everybody and they all show up at once.
Well, it depends on the generation. My generation didn't care. I mean, to my generation, it was all kind of funny and it didn't make that much of a difference. The only ones that we, because there were Mollies, there were multiple Mollies, multiple Bells, multiple Celias and multiple Sams. The way that the family distinguished between some of them was by
diminutives.
Using not adjectives, Yiddish. Yeah, that's right. They were diminutives. Like one would be big and one would be little. So as I said before, there was a.
But you had couples. Excuse me for interrupting. But you have couples that have the same identical names.
Well, yeah, but remember that so much. I mean, you have to remember that. These people were together so much face to face that you knew who you were talking about, right? I mean, so that it isn't like I had all of these relatives who were living within, I don't know, a mile of one another. And so much of this, and my grandparents lived upstairs, so much of this was about face to face stuff. But there would be times when we get mixed up. I would get mixed up with the Hermans. Jenny's Herman. Sometimes they would say Jenny's Herman or
there always had to be a qualifier.
There had to be some kind of qualifier. Yeah. And sometimes you could tell by tone of voice. I mean, if there was Sal de Ganef non grata, the one that the sleazy guy, I mean, and you could tell, or if there were two Highs. But when they were talking about my Uncle High, the kind of black sheep, as opposed to High Barnes, you could tell by the tone. But it's interesting that they took names. It was really from a limited pool of names. It's as if your confidence in American culture, you're willing to buy it, and your confidence in the language had broadened. These were not old country names. Some of them were, but it was really the first generation here. But they still were very cautious with what they used, so they would copy each other's names. The brothers would use the brothers and sister-in-laws would use Celia, for example, a few times. Or Esther is another one like that. Molly's another one. And it isn't like they're so Yiddish or so Jewish. They're Jewish enough, but it's just that they felt comfortable with those sounds, and everybody and the people adopted those small numbers of sounds. But I had three Sams. And you know, two grandfathers, and then Uncle Sam. But if you said Uncle Sam, everybody knew who that meant, and they would laugh. He was clearly a different kind of Sam.
But when it came to your kids,
yeah, my kids are just.
I mean, they have names that have nothing to do with anybody.
No,
else's
that's the
names.
Next generation, our generation of kids, and that's also about what the story is. When by the time we were born, the names become pretty much American, and by the time that we begin to have kids. Some of the names go back in my family, my cousin's kid's name. Some of them go back in the biblical direction, the old-fashioned names.
Well, that became very popular
it did
about
become,
20 some
still,
odd years ago.
It still is, and some of them were your typical kind of Dick and Jane names, and some of them were sort of in between. So my kids are named Joanna and Greg, which are not exactly vanilla names. They're not a Jennifer, which everybody was becoming at the time. But they're still
– No offense to all the Jennifers.
No offense. I like the name Jennifer, but it was really the most popular name there. But they were names that reflected, I think, a kind of comfort with where we live. We didn't have to worry. There's certain Jewish traditions about naming that you observed, but it was – naming wasn't an issue or a marker anymore. We didn't really have to think about it. And so you even have someone who gets a name, a German Heidi in my cousin's generation. And Heidi, of course, Heidi is associated with the Germans. And nobody in the 40s would have given their kids, no Jew would have given their kids anything resembling a German name. But things began to loosen up after that.
And nobody felt cheated that they didn't have a name that was a great-grandmother's name or
–
I mean, they never even went down that
path. No, the tradition is that you name – roughly, you use the same sound of a
– Or the first initial or
first something. Initial or something like that of someone who had passed away. So you have people named after your grandparents. But that's also honored in the breach. My kids – There's no G in the family. My son's middle name is Ian, and that's after his grandmother, his great grandmother Ida. But the reason we didn't give him Ian's first name had nothing to do with ritual. It had to do with that we were living in the middle of a small town in the Midwest, and we figured they'd never figure out what the word Ian meant. And in fact, they didn't. They pronounced it Jan. So that's kind of loosened up. The name thing in certain parts of the more Orthodox Jewish culture is still much more locked in.
But there is still this way of being able to remember
past
generations,
sure,
and feeling a connection to your family, no matter what your
named after.
Your culture is, of being able to remember those who have come before you and feel some connection to them.
Well, even if you didn't, you're not likely to know them. I mean, I was named after an uncle that died well before he died at the age of 19 from bone cancer. And I never knew him, but and I always knew I was named after him. And a common question is, who are you named after? And it's as creative and as flexible as it's got, that's still a regular question in the culture.
Well, even with my name, I mean, people used to ask me if I were from the South because it's Beth Ann.
Beth Ann, yeah.
No, actually, it's two great-grandmothers who are wonderful women and big shoes that I've always wanted to fill.
Yeah.
But, yeah.
But it's nice to have
it's
a kind
nice
of Betsy
that,
Casey
that
sort of
them.
Name, right? Yeah, yeah.
Well, that was what my grandmother called me, was Betsy. So there you go. Are you in my head? 941-3689, if you'd like to be in on this conversation.
I won't call you,
or
Betsy.
Or 877-941-3689. It's been a long time since anybody called me Betsy. We're going now to Smitty calling us from Kailua Kona, and thank you for your patience.
Okay, are you there?
We're right here. Want to hear your story.
Okay, well, the old story is that my mother, back since the 50s at least, every time she sent a package to any of us grown kids, it always had a Christmas ornament in it. Somewhere in the package of gifts, there would always be a Christmas ornament sequestered away, packed in something to put on the tree.
Well, that makes me feel good because I just sent off that in packages to my kids, too.
Well, good.
Maybe she part of the wrong generation. That's just it. There we go.
She did that as long as she lived. But what we do, because our kids were grown or were raised between Hawaii and the mainland and are now living on the mainland, is we buy those pillow packages of macadamia nut treats. Like the kind you get on the airline, they have them.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
Yeah, they make really good packing material.
Right. Instead of packing material, we buy the pillow packages of macadamia nut treats, and we pack their packages in those in the box, so when they open their presents, they have chocolate-covered mac nuts, and they have garlic mac nuts, and they have Hawaiian sea salt mac nuts, and they have that. Instead of a bunch of bubble pack, they have these nice little Hawaiian treats that otherwise they would never see.
How far away are they?
Oh, they're on the mainland, and they're out on the Olympic Peninsula in a little town named Port Ludlow.
Oh, boy, so they're really glad to get some of those good treats from Hawaii.
Yeah, they are.
Smitty, thanks so much for the call.
That was it. It's good. Not cheap, but a fun way to practice, package things instead of bubble packs.
If you think of it as a gift rather than as the wrap, it doesn't seem so bad.
Either way, it works.
It's good either way
because, you know, you may not be able to reuse it like you can with bubble wrap.
I just got a bunch of bubble wrap from a radio I bought, and I'm thinking if you would stuff that thing with macadamia nuts or something like that.
You'd be a much happier person.
I would be a much happier person.
All right, Smitty, thanks so much for the call.
Doesn't take much to make me happy.
I'm finding that out through a lot of these stories in here. But there are poignant stories in here. It's not all, you know, a big laugh, although there are many laughs, but there's sort of veiled laughs in here too.
Yeah, I've never, part of it is me, and part of it is, I think, the way I grew up in the family. The last stories to me are all pretty poignant.
And the ones about the retirement home.
Yeah, the ones, but at the same time, this
they're
is
all a, so funny.
They're funny because you can't, there's no way that I can ever look at something like that, like retirement homes or like funerals, without seeing multiple sides to it. It's just that's how I am. But I also think it's how often things are. Even funerals are not unmitigatingly sad. I mean, they certainly are, and it certainly has a, you know, obviously it's tragic and it's permanent. But there are other things that go on that, if you observe them, are funny, and it just doesn't seem to be to leave those things out. The story that I have about my mother-in-law's funeral and how that's tied into the funeral industry, there is no way that I saw that incident, that story, without including a lot of things that to me seemed to be odd and funny. It just wasn't human to me unless I put that in. Unless I started that story by saying, you know what, at this funeral I turned out to be a false rabbi, and here's why. That story just wouldn't make sense in my mind. It's not – there's a difference between trying to get cheap laughs and trying to explain something in a kind of nuanced way that is often both funny and sad. And that's – I think those last few stories are particularly like that as my parents get – as my parents get old and as my in-laws get old. But, you know, I write about it through things like Eddie Fisher showing up at an old folks' home.
And that's a good one. That's, you saw my finger on that one, didn't you?
Okay. No, I didn't, but yeah. I like that story.
Okay, I like that one, too. I also like
Jerry Seinfeld's Florida and My Hawaii,
yeah. Right. But the reason I'm thinking about New York is because just to prove the fact that we have people listening to us on the live stream, we have Julie calling us from New York. Hi there. It's a little later by you.
Hi there. Yes, it is a bit late. Almost bedtime here. And so I had a question for Neil.
I think I know who this is, but we'll let it slide, Julie. although I will ask how Vivian is.
Oh, well, Vivian's very well.
Okay, go ahead.
Thank you very much.
Right.
But we wanted to find out, what would one get a father-in-law who's very literate yet lives far away? What could be an ideal gift?
Well, the first one is if you finally show up with your husband and my granddaughter, that would be the best gift.
Oh, you show you.
Yeah, that's right. You know what? I don't care. I'm always so anxious to see you. On the other hand, anything that requires at least four figures, so up in the $1,000 range, would be fine.
Okay, that's good. We'll have a little time to shop then.
Yeah, or that's right. Or you can just talk a lot of people into buying this book, and that could work in the same way. It wouldn't cost you any money. It would cost you a little bit of time.
Oh, so, I love you,
that's
too.
That's right. This is way past your bedtime. Thank you for staying up.
Oh, pleasure. And as always, more questions later.
Yeah, okay, thanks,
thank
Julie.
So
take
much.
Care.
And yeah. Those are the answers we really want to hear. 941-3689.
They never call, they never write.
7-7-9-4-1-3-6-8. Well, she did tonight.
Yeah, she did tonight.
941-3689. If you've got a story about a tradition, something that passes from year to year, or you wish would maybe pass out of your experience.
How cheesy is this? My daughter-in-law calls, a friend of mine from Einheina call, and I recognize the voice, right? So I did not plan this. Really, I did not plan this.
But, you know, the promos were running, and everybody knew that you were going to be talking about this, and there have been
a lot of
people talking about
the
book. All kidding aside, though, there are things in the story, in the collection of stories, that touch everyone. Because you couldn't be a human being and not see some of this stuff if you have grandchildren and they live far away, or you live far away from other people that you love.
Well, I'm glad,
and
because
watching generations age, and how do you participate in your family when they're not next door?
You know, it's really important to me, and that really is what moves me, because my family was not made up of ancestors that you would worship, and they were not cultural teachers, they were not gurus, they were not mentors, they were not particularly heroic. They were ordinary people, and I was always put off to some extent by how many stories that people tell about their families are emphasized, the kind of sitting at the foot of your grandfather or the heroic things that people went through. Now, I mean, any immigrant is a hero at a certain level, but in a small way. And what I wanted to get across to people is these little things, and that people who are not heroes, how important, quote, unimportant people are, and the little gestures and the small things. And it's interesting to see the reaction to the book. When I get emails about it, it's often about, that's just like my family. And if you saw Lee Cataluna's play, which we've been talking about at the Flowers of Hawaii, that's part of the reaction that people have when they see that play, and that's what makes it good. First, they say, wow, these are a bunch of crazy people. But then they step back and say, wait a second, these are not heroes. They're not villains. They're more ordinary people, and this is a play about ordinary life, and that's what the stories are about.
I did see that play, and that was part of the discussion that many of us had afterward. there are things that are so common to all families. That's the bottom line. Sort of no matter where you come from, there are ways of looking at things, ways of doing things. Once I was at a friend's home and there was a little sign by the door and it was written in Chinese. And so I said to a friend, oh, Carl, what does this say on the door here? He and his wife, and they would pass it. Is this, you know, some nice little thing? Tell me what this says. He says, no, it's a note from my mother. It says, is the stove off? Have you made sure that you locked all the windows?
So they think it's some kind of Confucian ideograph. Right. Yes. See, that's the difference. That's right. And people would think, unless it's an explicit statement about the culture, that it isn't worth talking about. That's plenty worth talking about because it shows misperceptions. It shows practical things.
And the fact that there are so many threads that are far more similar than not, and especially when we start to sit down and tell stories about our families, that's what begins to emerge. Is there a story that's not in the book that you wish you had put into it?
There's a story that's not in the book that I wish I could have rewritten in a way that I liked. I used to tell this story a lot. Some of these stories I've used in performance a long time ago. And it was about this subject of ancestor worship and how this was not a kind of thing. And I used to like it. And then I began to think about the fact that it had – the good part of us was it was about how much of what I knew and what my brother and sister knew about what was going on with the immigrants in our family, the grandparents and the great aunts and so on, was essentially imagined because we would hear them talking in Yiddish one floor up. And you could – I mean, Yiddish is a tremendously emotional language. And so you would imagine things from the shouting and the laughing and all of that. But I never could get the story right in terms of the combination of and what the story had a part in it where we imagine what my Uncle Laba was like, who was this little hunchback-looking guy who smoked Marlboros. And so we had this story that we imagined about him being the Marlboro man. And it was funny at first – but it doesn't do what I wanted to do. So that's other than that, I think that a few stories that I've written about that I like about local folks it took me a while to figure out to write older local folks. That's not in there, and it's not in there not because I didn't – it just didn't seem to fit into this collection.
Well, maybe it's in The Gift of Underpants Part 2.
That's right. In fact, it is about an old guy who becomes an underwear model, but that's another story.
Didn't know
so
that
to
part.
Speak, that's another story.
Bottom line with all of these stories, though, is that in some cases you've got to make an effort to get them down because you not knowing certain things about your family that you can only suppose or infer – because maybe the whole story was never really told. It goes back to that lesson for all of us, that if you want to make sure it gets passed on, you better take the time to sit down and get the story right.
Well, and you better understand that getting the story right can be a confining sample.
And
that
confounding.
That is, I've never been interested in the accuracy of the genealogy of the family. I don't want to get the genealogy wrong, but tracing the genealogy was not as interesting to me as trying to create the stories.
As a good story.
As a good story and from other things that I knew, fully knowing that some of this information is a little bit, this is not investigative reporting. This is essay. And there is a difference between the two.
And we're very glad there is. The collection is just lovely. Thanks very much for sharing
with
us.
Oh, you're welcome. Glad
tonight.
To do it.
The book is The Gift of Underpants, Neil Milner's first book. And as you heard with other stories, no doubt there will be a second. Thanks so much for coming in and doing something totally different. And now for something truly different, we talk about underpants instead of politics. Ooh, things that go undercover. Maybe that's the thread. We'll find out more when we talk next week on The Conversation. We will see you right there tomorrow morning at 8 o'clock. I'm Beth Ann Kozlovich. Thanks so much for joining us tonight for a little fun. Take good care. Aloha.